This is Steve Sherlock with another in a series of podcasts for Franklin Matters.
As some of you are aware, I was on vacation last week and I missed both the school committee meeting and the town council meeting on August 5th and 6th, respectfully. I did try to obtain a DVD copy of the meetings from the library. It was the first time I had done so. I'm surprised that they only have meetings from April on hand currently, and this is in August. Maybe you knew this already. It was the first time I tried to get this copy. Apparently, the cable company brings over 3 months of meetings at a time. So the next delivery will bring over May, June, and July. But the first week of August meetings would not be available until November. So, anyway, I don't have a whole lot of recording, obviously. I don't have any recording from the 5th and the 6th. You've been able to read the newspaper articles, and we'll have to deal with that for the time being. But what I do want to do is go back to the town council meeting of 7/23, July 23rd, where they had the full DPW presentation on stormwater. If you recall, at the time I did the summary of the meeting, told you the three important things you needed to know. The stormwater presentation itself was too long to put in that piece, but since I need to do something, I think what I'll do is I'll put that in here. It's about 18 minutes. It's a good presentation. It has a lot of information. It still doesn't, or this particular segment, won't include any of the Q&A after, but it'll give you the DPW full attention for their full presentation, approximately 18 minutes, and we'll let it go at that.
I'd just like to give you a little, this is kind of an educational type thing for you all and the general public, and then like where we've been and where we're going and where we'd like to be. As you realize, stormwater is one of those things that keeps coming up. It's, I like to call it the unfunded mandate. You know, it's keep getting pushed down to the towns. What we've done so far is we were actually able to secure a grant for $15,000, and we've started working on a feasibility study for a stormwater utility that we're going to get into a little later. We've also been able to secure a $130,000 grant for some basically BMP retrofits. We're going to do some improvements in town to some existing structures to improve the pollution and also try to get some recharge. And that's one's up on Panther Way, High Ridge, and then Lockwood Drive. Okay, a little on stormwater. Stormwater, basically, when it rains or snows, where does all that water go? And some of the precipitation evaporates, some seeps in the ground, recharge for groundwater that feeds our trees and plants, streams, and drinking water wells. Some of the precipitation runs off the land, that's where we get the name stormwater. Precipitation seeps into the pervious surfaces like soil and sand and runs off impervious surfaces like pavement and rooftops. Notice that the groundwater table is higher in the less developed land than in the more developed land. That's because there's more recharge in areas with less pavement. So as you know, with Franklin, this is an important thing for us because all our water sources is from groundwater wells. And that's why we're constantly battling that. We're trying to make improvements. And Franklin, just to add here, we're, as far as new construction goes, we're really in a good place because anything that comes before now, we do require 100% recharge on site. So Franklin is ahead of the power curve compared to a lot of towns in that area. Question we always get is, you know, how much rain do we get in Massachusetts? We get about 45 inches of rain. That's on average, some more, some less. Where our precipitation goes will depend on how fast it falls and the type of surface it falls on. Obviously, you know, like on Monday, we had a quarter inch of rain in 15 minutes. A lot of that did not make it into the ground. It just, it sheds off and goes to the nearest stream, river, Charles River out. More pavement means less runoff, less recharge. It just kind of shows you the evaporation, the runoff, and recharge, depending on the type of soils, and also the zoning classifications. Paved surface and rooftop generate a lot more stormwater, obviously, than lawns would. Too much stormwater can lead to flooding. Fast-moving stormwater from heavy rains can cause erosion problems. Stormwater can pick up pollutants from the land and carry them to our lakes, streams, and oceans. Stormwater pollution can increase the temperature of the water, fish kill, cause algae blooms, make the water unfit for consumption, recreation, and wildlife. We're dealing with I think we brought before about the phosphorus loading in the Charles. We've been meeting ongoing, Jeff and I, with EPA about trying to reduce the phosphorus loading in the Charles. Just another thing that's coming along. Are you going to go this way? Okay. Managing in Franklin is some of the stuff we've done. What we try to do. What we're trying to do.
Good.
Storm drains. Everybody calls these sewers. They're actually storm drains. They're not part of the sewer systems. They collect and move stormwater quickly away from streets and parking lots. But what happens is stormwater flows down the drain. Most storm drains connect to the closest wetland, pond, and stream. So a typical drain or storm drain system will have a sump in there. We catch a lot of the solids, and that's where you see the catch basin cleaner will get that. But you still, if something is liquefied, it is going to go into the nearest wetland area. So there's very limited treatment with it, unless there is a retention pump. Rain, snow, melt, wash away all kinds of substances down the storm drain, such as leaves, sand, winter salt, road sediment from construction sites and bare slopes, and litter. Some nutrients and bacteria, gasoline and oil from cars, lawns, fertilizers, and pesticides. These all pollute our fresh water and our ocean. Eventually gets there. Once again, our community must comply with state and federal regulations to manage the stormwater flow under NPDES and phase 2 and 4, which we're constantly doing. We're in year 5 of our NPDES permit, right?
Correct.
And then, obviously, we're going to keep going forward. We haven't seen the new regulations be coming forward. At this point, Denise is going to go over some of the things that residents can do, and then also some things that the town can do to help to improve stormwater.
Okay, so homeowners. What it's suggested is 4 lawn care and garden tips. Use fertilizer and pesticides sparingly. Using organic lawn care methods, mulch your lawn clippings and leaves, or compost them, and replant bare areas to stop erosion. One of the aspects, too, with fertilizer is that you're best off getting a soil test done. The Ag Extension does do soil tests, and that will help you save money by applying the fertilizer that's really needed for your lawns. So you're not wasting money on unnecessary fertilizers. Keep your grass higher, mowing 2 to 3 inches high, so this way you get dense growth and you can deter weeds. You can reduce your lawn size. Do not overwater your lawn. And by using native vegetation along streams and lakefronts, you can also reduce erosion into those water bodies. For car care, use a commercial car wash that treats or recycles the wash water. Or you could also wash your car on your lawn. To encourage infiltration into your lawn rather than onto your driveway, into the streets, into the storm drain. Maintain your car to prevent fluid leaks. Bring your used motor oil, antifreeze, tires, and batteries to the Beaver Street Recycling Center. I also know that used motor oil is also accepted at garages that do regular car maintenance. I believe that they are required by law to accept that. Other ideas are to make sure that you pick up after your pet when you take them for a walk and dispose of it in your toilet or trash, and also to aim your roof downspouts away from paved surfaces or into a rain barrel. Every spring, Franklin does have a rain barrel sale. It's been very successful. Actually, this past spring, we sold, I believe, over 85. We sold a full truck of rain barrels in our one-day event, and I keep on getting requests for them. So it's a hugely popular program. Also, to make sure that you dispose of your oil-based paint, cleaners, and other household chemicals at our Household Hazardous Waste Day. This year will be October 4th. Rather than dumping them down the drain, storm drain. Also, recycle your paper, cardboard, cans, plastic, and glass so that they don't wind up in our storm drains and as litter. I guess the gist of this presentation for the homeowners or residents of Franklin is to make sure that we take care of our storm drains. We never put anything down a storm drain, only rain and precipitation down the drain. So we don't put pet waste, motor oil, paint, litter, leaves, well, leaves and sand, you know, it's on the roads. We do our best to make sure that we do our part to clean up the roads, but any additional from the residents would be unhelpful. Sweep leaves and debris away from the storm drains and start a storm drain stenciling program in your neighborhood. If you see up there, that's a photo of one of the storm drains in Franklin. We did have an Eagle Scout project this past summer that assisted the DPW in adhering storm drain markers to the storm drains in the Town Common area, Main Street, and I believe it's Union Street. So it's walking around town, you might see those storm drains. Our current level of municipal services are for us to be in compliance with the 6 EPA-mandated NMFDS Phase 2 control measures. Those include public education and outreach, public involvement and participation, illicit discharge detection and elimination. For public education and outreach, you can see that we have a trifold poster display. I also go out into the schools, the high schools, some of the middle schools, or we host scouts at our DPW facility, and I do some education about stormwater and how important it is that we protect that resource. And public involvement and participation, we were present at Earth Day. Again, we had the Eagle Scout project for the storm drain marking. And our illicit discharge and detection and elimination program, currently it's to identify all of our storm drain outfalls. It's not so much a problem with the newer developments. It's more the older sections of town where we still have to do a lot of field verification of those outfall structures. And with that, it's also to make sure that we don't have inadvertently a sewer hookup to our storm drains. It's very unlikely, but it's still requirement by EPA to verify that we don't have any illicit discharge in our drainage system. 4, 5 are construction site stormwater runoff control and post-construction stormwater management. Those we have through our stormwater management bylaw 153. And with that, we are able to ensure that erosion from active construction sites are not going off-site, so as to get into our roadways, get into any area that we don't want sedimentation to go on their neighbors' properties, go into wetlands, go into our storm drains. And then 6 is pollution prevention and good housekeeping in our municipal operations. You'll see Jack out there doing our street sweepings and the clamshell truck to dig out or to clean out our storm drain sumps. And down below is an example of one of the storm drain grates lifted up. So we go in there, our DPW crew goes out there and cleans our, sweeps the streets, cleans out the sumps, but there's still more that we need to do. There's infrastructure repairs and retrofits. As I go out and do outfall inspections, you can see an outfall right there. We have a lot of sedimentation pipes that are half full, maybe three quarters full, maybe even buried. Headwalls that are falling in. And if we don't know about it, just through field verification, you know, it's more of an emergency flooding situation that we come upon in then. So it's basically being more proactive with our drainage system. We need to do more increased maintenance for compliance with our NMFDS permit. And also using our GIS department or person to do our mapping of our drainage system. Basically, my goal is to have a better handle of our drainage system and where we can do improvements, retrofits, and make sure that we bring proactive for our NMFDS permit. One of the solutions to managing stormwater is establishing a stormwater utility. This concept has been accepted nationwide by about 500 communities, is to establish a fee-based system. Typical household fees have ranged from $30 to $100 annually. Some New England communities are Reading, Massachusetts, Newton, South Burlington, Vermont, Augusta, Maine, and Chicopee, Massachusetts. And there are many others in Massachusetts that are following suit. The advantages of a stormwater utility is to have a stable source of dedicated funding. It allows for the consolidation of our stormwater responsibilities, being able to plan for long-term improvements, and to provide a fair apportionment of different land uses through the tax base. So a resident versus commercial versus industrial, that type of apportionment. We did get a grant from the Coastal Zone Management through the state for about $15,000 to do a feasibility study for having a stormwater utility. And what it did was to look at our existing management of our stormwater, basically what departments do, what task, define our other needs to comply with the federal mandated obligations, and possible options for a fee-based system. We toyed with an initial budget, such as additional catch basin cleaning, additional street sweeping, doing best management practice retrofits. And best management practices, for example, are your retention basins, your wet ponds, your stormwater detention ponds that are in some of your community or neighborhoods, doing maintenance on those structures also. Other measures are required for regulatory compliance.
I just want to throw in, we get a lot of calls. You know, people, they get their retention ponds that were built like 15, 20 years ago, and they're full of trees now, and they're not draining right. And, you know, we don't have the resources, you know, whether it's manpower or funds, to go out and maintain these as they should be. I mean, they're working, but they're not working like they should be. So this is some of the retrofits. The other thing is a lot of them that were designed in the past, they were actually for stormwater control, for flooding, so you keep the floods from downstream. But what the catch-all is now is to actually do a recharge on site. So instead of just keeping, while that water's there, might as well keep it, try to get back in the ground so we can reuse it, take out of the ground for the wells, instead of just, you know, keep going down Shepherd's Brook or Mines Brook in the Charles River. Some of these things, you know, it depends on the soils that are there, but, you know, some things, it's a matter of raising the head wall, the outfall, to allow that water to stay in there longer instead of just bypassing through. But one of the things that, you know, drainage, like I always say, it's like, it's so expensive to do because it's all underground and it's, you never see it again. You know, and you got to keep maintaining it. So it's a frustrating thing because we've done a number of projects working in town. We've identified things, even some of the roads, and we're able to fix some of the catch basins and stuff. But there should be sizing changes and stormwater pipes and to meet compliance now if it's being built, but we just don't have the funds to do it.
We came up with an average annual budget for the six-year period of, say, $500,000. The fee basis, we'd be looking at the impervious surface of a single family home. So that'd be your roof and your driveway. And this is based on our own GIS evaluation, similar to what the town of Reading did. And using the average area of a single family home as a basic unit for setting fees, all single family residents would be charged the same fee. We came up with about 16,000 single-family units, so approximately $40 a year would be charged annually, or a $40 annual fee for a single-family residence. And then all the other properties, commercial, industrial, would be based upon a single-family equivalent. So you take the industrial complex and you determine their square footage, and then you figure out how many single family equivalents to determine their fee. So we kind of tossed that about, but we're coming and presenting this to you to get guidance from you. from the town council, what our next steps should be. We want to continue our public information process. We'd love to refine our program costs and budget, review options for fee abatements, and also define a process for billing and collection if we were to go forward with further analysis.
This podcast has been a public service provided to my fellow Franklin citizens and voters by Steve Sherlock. For additional textual information, you can visit franklinmatters.blogspot.com. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at SherSteve, SHERSTEVE, @gmail.com, or leave a comment on the blog, which sends an email to me as well. The music intro and closing is from the PodSafe Music Network, John Schmidt, powerful, exhilarating piano music. I hope you enjoy.